Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 9 of Differential Diagnosis, a HouseMD podcast. Well, we're going to be looking at Season 2, Episode 9 of HouseMD, called Deception. As always, one of your differential diagnoses is me, Harvey, and your other differential diagnoser is Gaz.
I prefer the term diagnostician, but I'll take that. Yeah, happy to be here.
You should have worked harder if you wanted somebody to call you diagnostician.
True. You know, that's fair enough. You've shut down all of my dreams. You've pointed out the deficiencies in my intelligence. And also confirmed to a rival podcast that we're not a bunch of MDs in a basement talking whatever, right?
Well, rival sounds hostile. They're just another one.
Yeah, well, you know. He who is without sin cast the first stone, you know?
Absolutely, and I'm certainly not that. So we're back after another big delay. You gotta love it. It's a running theme here. We like to say we'll be out every Monday, but hey, just check in at random every 4 weeks. I'm sure there'll be something. Well, in this episode, we're looking at Deception, which I mostly remember as just starring Miranda from Sex and the City as the patient.
Yeah.
And Gaz, what are like your overall thoughts about it, just to give us a theme? Because I remembered this as like a good episode, but I don't think it's one of the classics.
No. And also, I just want to say that Cynthia Nixon also ran to become mayor of New York. Fancy that. Was it?
Did she win?
Or was it mayor or... I'm going to check this. I'm going to use the power of the internet to check. You can edit this out if you like. No, it was actually she campaigned to become governor of New York. Jesus Christ, sure. That's a big one.
Did she win?
No, she did not.
Well, I tried to be a doctor once and that didn't happen. I don't go on about it like... like Miss Nixon, so it's irrelevant.
Hey, I just thought it was an interesting little factoid. I got it wrong initially. I flubbed it, and I said, "Hey, maybe mayor of New York." Nope. She just ran to become governor, which is a bit like a step up, I guess. I don't know why we're talking about this. Is a rabbit hole that was completely unanticipated by yes, I just wanted to say that factoid.
That's fine, but what are you, away from the factoid, what are your thoughts about the episode? That's what people come here for. You seem to think there's more going on than I do.
It's not memorable, but there's a bit going on. There are a few little bits and pieces whirring in the background. We've got Foreman trying to foment some sort of revolution slash make himself the head of diagnostic medicine. And indifferent Cuddy. Again, Cuddy's taking a bit of a backseat. Chase is back to his like backseat role, pretty much non-existent. But where the drama is, it's Foreman, House and Cameron, isn't it? And then, like, a sprinkling of Wilson just to make it all good. But
along with Chase taking a backseat, the one taking the real backseat is Stacey, who just is not around for this one again.
Yeah.
I know there's some good stuff coming next episode, but it's very weird to just leave her out of this, like, after sort of how key she was. Sort of last episode, you'd have thought we'd be continuing to see the rebuilding of that relationship. But I guess they're leaving us on tender hooks.
Well, yes.
While Chase just sort of complains that he's been furloughed for a bit.
Is that what we're now going to use as a technical term for when the showrunners decide to, like, not mention anyone? They've been furloughed.
I guess so. For any Americans listening, furloughing is what the government has in the UK has offered as an alternative to making people redundant, where they are paying 80% of the wages to anyone who is like considered non-essential in a business at the moment because of all the lockdowns. So, but yeah, we're considering that Chase has been on furlough for a little bit.
Yeah, he's being paid, but he's only minorly present. He's like 20% there.
Yeah, he is almost integral for a scene, and then that totally falls away. And we'll talk about that later in the episode, about how weirdly unutilized and pointless chases again. It's almost like they ran out of ideas with him immediately.
They were like, oh, we've got him in one episode. That's enough. Totally uninspired by the profile of this character at the moment.
1 out of 24, that's pretty good. Wow. I mean, Chase is about as relevant as any of the patients.
Probably just as got a lower hit rate on the episodes than like the chemist.
I mean, I think the chemist has had more of a storyline. There was like the chemist lost his keys once. That's more emotional than anything Chase has done.
Except for the weird shit, obviously.
Of course, yeah, he just does some weird shit. So, do you want to give us the synopsis so people know what we're talking about, and then we'll get into it?
Yeah, of course. This is a special Sex and a City edition of House. As always, this synopsis is powered by the house.fandom.com wiki. Done a cracking job this time around. This one's a little bit smaller than the usual one. Sometimes you can get like an entire like essay on an episode, but this one's like one paragraph and it's pretty pithy. I like it. So here we go. Deception is a second season episode of House, which first aired on December 13th, 2005, when an off-track gambler comes to the hospital. The team quickly diagnoses her with Munchausen syndrome. But House thinks there may be more fact than fiction to the woman's story. Meanwhile, House takes advantage of being supervised by Foreman. That's the understatement of the episode.
Well, I guess, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to sound unenthusiastic, but this is kind of one of those episodes where I'm not sure. There's a couple of things that bug me, and it's not amazing enough to have a lot of meat to talk about. But you know, I'm going to keep up the enthusiasm, and I hope you will too. When we try our best to talk about season 2, episode 9, Deception. I actually have a factoid, if you want to have a factoid.
Yeah, give me a factoid.
This is a House-related factoid. I saw on the HouseMD subreddit just now, on the Friday that we're recording. Yeah. So if you're listening to this on Monday, the Friday before is House's canonical birthday.
Oh, wow.
And he would have been 61 years old.
Christ.
And either dead or living in Colombia as some sort of village doctor. Whatever your fan theory is on what happened.
Well, many happy returns to Greg, living or dead.
Yep, I bet he's pretty depressed either way.
Wilson is definitely out of the picture now, but... Oh shit, I've just spoiled something. Let's edit that out.
I think everybody knows. I think usually a lot of what we do is we talk about in sequence how the plot goes a lot and sort of talk about the beats and then discuss them as we go. But I think for this episode, we can talk more generally.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just my slight apathy towards this episode.
Oh, so you want to change the rules just because baby is you're not as interested, I guess.
Well, I suppose so, but I'm all up for whatever you think. But I feel like... So the start of the episode is House at the bookies, you know, and he meets a woman who clearly loves the bookies. She loves the horses, and they have a little bit of an exchange. But then what happens is she just starts seizing, and there's a little funny scene where House is like, do we have a doctor here? Because he doesn't want to deal with it. And then he's interested because she has some very bad bruising on her abdomen, which he spots. And then the entire sort of episode from there, aside from all the other plots, which we'll get to, but the main patient story is, it's sort of the question of whether or not this woman is faking. You know, does she have Munchausen syndrome, or is she actually ill? Which the show then later goes on to resolve that actually she's both ill and has Munchausen syndrome, which is, you know, an interesting concept. It's like, you know, imagine if somebody, you know, faked illnesses and was now actually ill. It's the boy cried wolf story, except as House jokingly says, you know, the wolf does actually come in the end. So I guess that's like the concept behind it. But I think my main problem with it, like I might have just described that concept, and I'm assuming anybody who's listening to this has probably watched it, and I would recommend that you watch it because you won't have any idea what we're talking about, because, you know, we're not going to go into that much detail and explain every frame as we're watching it. This isn't a DVD commentary. But I think overall my issue is that I don't quite understand why House thinks this woman is ill when a lot of the characters prove with extreme, extreme clarity that this woman probably has Munchausen's, and like with very logical and rational arguments. And often even when House like believes something, he can often like explain it, or there's something else going on. But you know, even during the diagnostics, like someone will say why something is the case, and then, you know, will literally go, well, I've actually ran a sort of experiment to show why she has this, because she has Munchausen's. And House is kind of just sort of in denial of that. And it turns out that he's right, or that everyone's right in the end. But it's, I find, yeah, it just kind of seems a bit strange that House thinks that. And I'm not sure if he's doing it because, as we'll go on to say, Foreman is now sort of in charge now. I guess my most reasonable theory is that he's just doing it to be difficult and mess with Foreman. But even that seems like a stretch. I don't know what you think, Gaz. That's like my entire like splurge on the plot and why I don't really find the patient story that interesting, because we sort of... we don't learn a lot about the patient other than that they actually have Munchausen's and a bit of background behind that. But I don't really find that the sort of diagnostic puzzle as interesting, because it just seems to be House just saying things without much reason for it.
I guess one of the things about it is that it retreads an old theme with some of the diagnostics, which is not all things are monocausal. Like, it's not just one cause and one effect per se. You know, that there could be a number of things competing, or a number of factors competing, or that one, what seems to be one cause that is true, could be hiding another one. And that sometimes the simplest explanation isn't always the right one. She can have it's not like she has Munchausen's and that's it. It's... Which is what Cameron does. She gets kind of like, if it's Munchausen, that's it. Game over. The whole thing's over. There's no disease to talk about. But it turns on its head and says, well, actually, House's whole thing is, yeah, she might have Munchausen's, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're invulnerable to being ill, or that their behavior somehow indemnifies them from having another disease or something else, that you can have both. That's logically possible. Proving that is the problem. And I think it's the way that there's no kind of chain of logic that allows the viewer to kind of progress and go, okay, I see House's train of thought, even if it's at the end of the episode. That didn't really happen. And that, I think, is the weakness. So that there wasn't that chain of reasoning that you could either follow at the end of the episode or follow through the entire episode as it occurs. That's the problem.
Yeah, I guess that's the unsatisfying bit. Because as you say, like, there's a lot of the recurring ideas. I was going to say recurring ideas coming back, but that's what recurring means. So it's like, yeah, you have the Occam, you know, in the episode Occam's Razor, which is like a first season early episode, you have that joke of, you know, Occam's Razor dictates that the simplest thing is always usually going to be the true outcome. Mm-hmm. And so that episode actually deals with the idea that actually somebody having two illnesses is actually simpler than somebody having one really rare illness. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like the joke in the logic of that episode. And this kind of does that again, as you say, with the, you know, it doesn't just have to be Munchausen's or, you know, healthy. Mm. Or Munchausen's or just ill. You know, it can be both. For anybody who doesn't know what Munchausen's is from not watching the episode, it's a psychiatric condition where people will pretend to be ill in order to get attention from doctors, which is usually brought on from being ignored as children, or like children who have parents or siblings who sort of had a lot of attention on them when they were growing up, and they kind of start to see that like medical attention and being in hospitals is like a positive feedback thing. Mm. I'm not a psychologist, so I might have described that awfully. but yeah, and then there's even things like at the start of this season, in season two, episode one, in Acceptance, which is where you have the death row inmate played by LL Cool J. And it kind of explores that there as well, where, you know, he's a death inmate, he's going to die, and everyone's like, what's the point in healing him? And House sort of bites his side, because he's like, you know, it's the actually, you know, we're doctors, we're supposed to heal people. And even though he's kind of breaching the rules, you kind of get an extra insight into House's value system, mm. where actually things like that are important, you know, things like just revenge and, oh, somebody's going to die anyway, don't really compute in his worldview. Mm. So I can kind of see how those kind of relate to this. Like, you know, this person with Munchausen's is ill, and he's saying, you know, just because she has Munchausen's doesn't mean she couldn't be ill. And he's sort of fighting her corner for that, whether or not that's to be like anarchic and cause trouble, or because that's part of an actual value system. I think, as you say, it's like, it doesn't really... There's something ultimately unsatisfying about it, because I don't know why he thinks that she's unhealthy. Like with Acceptance and the, you know, death row inmate, like the death row inmate is actually ill, and that whole situation of him defending him is still logical, because House is actually just, you know, following the actual illness. Mm. Whereas in this, I just don't see that he has any logical reason to think she has Munchausen's. And even if he was just messing with Foreman, you know, it's the point where he's like, you know, she is actually discharged with Munchausen's and told to leave the hospital. And he follows her and injects her with sort of a cocktail of stuff in order to actually like give her all of the symptoms that he thinks she has.
Well, he gives her...
Like, he goes so far as to almost losing his career. And then even then it turns out he was wrong. So it's like, well, what evidence did he even have? Mm. That he thought she should have that, when it turns out that he was wrong and that she shouldn't have even had that at all. Like, it's kind of half explained, but I don't really follow the logic of it from House's mm. perspective.
Well, just to clarify, House gives her the needle and asks her to do it.
Oh, yes, he doesn't like sneak up on her,
just like jab her.
Like Hitman, and just inject her.
I think is the problem. There's no coherent logical progression that we can follow, even if it is an unorthodox approach. It kind of treads on old ground in that respect by saying, you know, things aren't as straightforward as they seem, that just because one thing is in there doesn't exclude other possibilities. One condition is in there doesn't exclude other possibilities. Within the actual episode, they turn Cameron into this kind of Captain Ahab kind of thing, where she's just chasing this like Munchausen's diagnosis to the ends of the earth, and actually becomes a bit more Houseian than House does in this episode. She like puts like some medication near her drawer and tests whether she'll take it to give herself an adverse reaction so that she can prove that it's Munchausen's, which she does. And that is true. But it's, so that's an interesting character progression, like where you see someone doing morally dubious things to get results.
Which I think this episode, like, patient aside, this episode is a really interesting form and in Cameron episode mostly. Because, like, if you're talking about Cameron, like, yeah, that entire setup where she kind of says to the woman, like, you've got Munchausen's, I know you have, and then leaves a bottle of antibiotics with a label pretending it's something more dangerous on it to, like, basically force her hand to make her take some drugs is, like, a great setup from Cameron. Mm. And it's interesting because it comes after a conversation that she has with Cameron. It comes after a conversation Cameron has with Chase, where Cameron is asking why Foreman got put in charge. Because I think at this point, like, Cameron and Foreman are definitely seen as the more like experienced doctors.
Yeah.
Like, Chase comes up with some, like, wild out of, you know, field ideas.
Yeah.
Which is like how he's trying to emulate House. But Cameron and Foreman are much more the kind of, like, actual intellectual, like, clever doctors in that sense.
I mean, Chase
and
just
Cameron's really up.
I mean, Chase just says, she must be a prostitute. And it's just like, well done, Chase. Well done.
Yeah. In this one, Chase's ideas aren't the best. And Chase is so backseat in this episode, it's ridiculous. But the only real scene that he has much effect on is when Cameron is arguing with Chase why Foreman was put in charge, and Chase just says, you know, you've been on a date with House, you've had sex with me. He jokes that it's like a sexual harassment case waiting to happen. But the big thing he says is that being in charge is important because you have to say no to House. And I think from that point, that really then inspires Cameron to be a lot more conniving.
Mm.
Like, she can't say no to House sort of out loud. But what she starts doing is she starts, like, trying to prove the Munchausen's theory, because in a way that's her way of saying no to House. It's quite an interesting character trait. Yeah. Like, she's being confrontational, but she's being confrontational with logic because she can't actually be confrontational.
The other thing that's interesting about the character is I think there's like a blind... Chase is like half right. That is one of the aspects. The other aspect is... Cameron has become more like House in the sense of executing certain decisions. So in this case, with the Munchausen thing, she did something like House would do, which would do something like that to prove Munchausen. So that would, like, put the bottle there, see what happens, because we'd be able to track the effects of those drugs within her body quite distinctly. And that's kind of like a very Housean thing to do. And I think that's one element of why that's the case. I mean, although that being said, you know, Foreman is very much like House there as well. I mean, especially in terms of that kind of ambitious ambition and talent and willing to kind of bend things a little bit. I don't know, but I think that's a plot point, I think, is that also Cameron is a bit too much like House at the moment. Her willingness to take risks makes her pliable to House as well. Whereas Foreman's like House in the sense that he challenges House, is willing to challenge anyone if necessary. Whereas Cameron is like House in the sense of she'll do anything to prove the hypothesis she has. So it's like these two sides of House kind of facing off against each other, and Foreman becomes the leader because of the fact that he can say no to House, whereas Cameron is someone that would be more pliable to House's methods.
There's like a third aspect of House, which is like his ability to kind of make dangerous decisions, which is a point of contention between him and Foreman, because it's kind of revealed that the reason why, like, so just to set it up for anyone, in the last episode, it was sort of a dun-dun-duh moment where after the court case with Chase and the sort of errors that happened in the case, House was kind of held partly responsible for how everything was handled. So Foreman was put in charge of House's department for 2 weeks to oversee everything. And obviously Foreman really gets off on that for the reasons which Gaz has like explained, in that he's, you know, he's got the power hungry controlling aspects of House. But the one of the big things that comes up is that Foreman is praised for being really good at the admin aspect, and Cuddy even, like, you know, at one point Foreman tries to quit and Cuddy's like, no, you know, I've never had, you know, insurance bills and everything covered and the paperwork being done so well. But but one of the things that comes up between House and one of the things that comes up between House and Foreman is the issue that you know, obviously Foreman is told that if there's any errors or any mistakes, they're on you. And this actually, once Foreman learns this, it really freezes him up. And this is actually why the Munchausen's illness thing goes on so long, because Foreman can't make a decision on it.
Yeah.
Because he lacks that thing that House has, that special thing where he just can, you know, say sod it to the rules and the consequences and just actually go and make a decision, which I guess you could argue is kind of what House himself is demonstrating in this. Like, House is incredibly reckless in this. And while I think it's pretty illogical, I guess thematically, you know, if you have the trinity of House, you have Cameron being like the conniving side of House, you've got Foreman being the controlling, power-hungry side of House, and then House himself is representing the kind of archaic version of House.
Anarchic.
Where he's like, anarchic, yeah. Where he's like, you know, just going ahead and following this hypothesis just because he believes it, and it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks, which is a quality that Foreman lacks. And it kind of, I guess it's kind of showing why House is the best leader for the team and what makes him special. And while I disagree that it's logical and that it's that interesting to watch because it feels a bit random, I guess thematically that could be what that's trying to express. Mm. But it reveals a lot about Foreman's character, in that he's so, you know, we've been through this before with, you know, DNR, where Foreman was literally choosing between two doctors, which one he wanted to be. And he chose to be more like House. But it's nice that this episode's kind of expanding on that, where it puts Foreman in a position where he literally has power over House, and yet he can't quite rise to it because he still isn't really seeing what makes House special. He thinks House is just a jerk. But, like, Foreman's still simplifying that. Like, House is a very, like, House is a very unique jerk.
Well, actually, I think there's the monologue that he gives at the end towards Cuddy, which is that he says, you know, House doesn't break the rules. He just ignores them. You know, and he'll use any method at his disposal to get something. He's an anarchist, he says, and he uses an anarchical view of the world to practice medicine. He says anything goes. He can use this, or he can use that, or he can be unorthodox in these sorts of new inventive ways. And it makes him a really good medic because he can think outside of the box to try and get to a solution. The thing is, in that moment, Foreman identifies the secret source to House's success. But instead of embracing it as maybe an asset, he sees it as a threat to the hospital. He says, could you imagine medics like this throughout a hospital? Mortality rates would skyrocket. There's only really room for one House in the hospital, if that makes sense. But he still sees it as a moral threat to medicine that he is who he is. And yeah, it's an interesting moment. I don't know where it leads at the moment and where that will head off, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's as you, I mean, you and I have kind of talked about that before. And I think earlier you even said, like, that's the most succinct way that the House situation has ever been expressed. Yeah. It's like, you know, House isn't a nihilist, he's an anarchist. And the reason that makes him dangerous isn't just because, you know, of what he is. It's just like, if you took his rules and expressed them all over the hospital, like, the system would fall apart. And I guess that's really the best criticism of House. Mm. It's like his rules are totally unfunctional.
Well, they're not even rules.
If more than one person is doing
them. There's only one rule, which is be prepared to ignore rules.
Yeah.
There's one, that's the rule. And to use any, by ignoring the rules, then you can do anything. Anything's permitted. Because it's like that Dostoevsky quote, which is like, if God is dead, then everything is permitted. And if you, in House's sense, you know, if he kind of refuses to acknowledge the godhead of medicine as a conventional medic, then anything is permitted to heal the patient. I mean, he is still kind of governed by that rule, which is to heal the patient or solve the case. And we're still trying to figure out with the character where the healer is and where the kind of detective is and where they kind of line up as a character, because sometimes he's caring about the patient to such an extent that you think he's actually invested in just healing them. But then there are other cases where he's more disposed to just thinking of the patient as a in a dispassionate way and just thinks of them as a sheet of paper or a crossword puzzle that needs to be solved, or a riddle needing to be solved. So there are these kind of two things trying to be laid up properly. But undergirding that question is the fact that he will go to, he will do anything permissible or unpermissible within conventional morality or rules within medicine to achieve one of those two aims. And I think that's the fundamental conflict. Is he a healer or a detective? But also, how does he survive in an institution which is governed by the idea of a sanctity of rules as morality? You know, the rules of trials, the rules of the Hippocratic Oath, the rules of, you know, the law as well come into it. And I guess that's, if I was honest about it, I think that that's the fundamental undergirding theme of the entire show, which is basically the underlying theme is, how does House function in a world full of strictures and rules when he recognizes that the rules actually get in the way of getting things done? What is the worthiness of rules in society if they prohibit an ability to help people or that sort of thing? I think.
Yeah. And this is the problem with this episode, in that, like, I mean, once again, that's like a great analysis of the House character. And I think this episode almost touches on that more than the others.
Yes.
Because, it, you know, it's not just the interesting thing about putting Foreman into a leadership position is that he can compare himself to House as an actual leader, as an equal. Mm. And then we get like a really good analysis of, you know, what makes House a unique leader when we see how much Foreman fails at it, especially controlling someone like House. And I guess that's the frustration of the episode. Like, it does have a lot of good stuff and it does have a lot of like really succinct ways of summing up the characters. I mean, you know, you've got like, you know, sort of Cameron and Foreman like representing different parts of House. I guess Chase just represents the part of House that wants to watch monster trucks and do fuck all. in this episode, you know, very well played by him just doing shit all in the background. So, but it's a very weird episode because it has all of those things, but I just, and it's even got like an interesting like dynamic with the patient, but the dynamic is like conceptually interesting of like, you know, it's the boy who cried wolf, but in a medical drama. But then it's like, there's something about that patient story and like the way that House sort of follows through with it that I just do not find interesting to watch. Yeah. And I don't know if that's because, I mean, the actress Cynthia Nixon's not doing anything wrong. I just think sort of her character's a bit too, you know, her and House have a lot of banter and he gets on well with her. And there's an element of, because of that, there's not, this like the conflict is kind of hyper, you know, sort of, it's kind of abstract. It's like, oh, is she lying or not? Like, but nothing actually in the scenes with her is really drawing me into her as a character. And then she even opens up at one point at the very end to explain that she does have Munchausen syndrome, and just House listens to her story and just goes, oh, boo-hoo. It's like there's not really a lot to grab onto with that character. And then I kind of find the way House is so invested in her just slightly unbelievable. Mm. I mean, House clearly likes her. And once again, maybe you could look at it as something interesting and say, you know, because it is interesting when House likes a patient. He spends a lot of time with the death row patient. He spends a lot of time with, you know, with the jazz player in DNR, and he does gravitate towards some patients. And it's always interesting when he does, but he just seems to like this person because she bets on horses.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then he goes very far to helping her. And you think, is he helping her a lot because he just likes her?
Mm.
Because she bets on horses? I mean, it's probably the least interesting sort of character relationship, like House-patient relationship we've seen. I guess it kind of makes sense. I don't know. It all just feels very weak, even though, as you've just expressed, there's a lot going on in terms of the characters.
Yeah, I think that, at least from in this sense, it's a swing and a miss from the writer, because, or the director as well, whatever happened, in the sense that they had a celebrity kind of actress or actor there, and she was not utilized convincingly enough. They put all these kind of interactions in, but they weren't really sharp enough or distinctive enough to really propel it. The character was so weak, but they felt, obviously, because they had a celebrity on there, that they had to then put these scenes in. I don't know. I don't know if it's a matter of, like, the celebrity comes in and they had to beef up the episode with those interactions to try and make it convincing and it failed, or whether it was just an episode that failed to do what it was supposed to do and it just coincidentally had a celebrity guest star. It just was disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think at this point, like, she's no more a celebrity than like Hugh Laurie is. But as you say, like it's difficult to ascertain because, you know, you do wonder, like, once they've written the script and then they cast someone, they're like, wow, this is a really good casting. Like, let's give them more stuff to do. And it's just, I mean, I'm sure that plays a factor, but I just think overall, like, even if they had beefed it up, like, I just think this is episode, like, in terms of the patient, is more like, it's more like conceptually interesting than interesting in its execution. It's, you know, it's the kind of thing, if I said, like, oh, imagine a world where, you know, everyone is like, imagine a world where everyone turns into an oxygen molecule, and you'd be like, oh, that's a weird concept. And then you'd make it and it's just literally nothing.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, that's a terrible example, but I, you know, obviously they put more thought into this one because the concept, you know, is there. And even like House using the boy that cried wolf example, it's like, wow, well, that must have been the idea behind the whole thing. But I don't know, there's, you know, I don't really have anything more to say on it because I just think, you know, even though we've talked about some interesting character angles, it really does fall into this. I do never really watch this episode, and watching it again, I kind of realized why, but it kind of feels like it should be more interesting because it's got such an interesting concept. But I feel like that concept is just really is either just executed badly or actually just couldn't be executed that interestingly, or they've kind of done this before where it's like, oh, is the patient telling the truth? I feel like that has been done a lot better, and maybe this is just a boring version of it. But I'd be very interested to hear from other people if you want to get in touch with us and like, because I'm not a huge fan of this episode, I think Gaz, you know, thinks it has some loftier ideas going on and is able to express that. But I don't know. There's something about this episode. I just don't think I like it. And I don't think I can really express why other than I just don't really believe why House is doing what he's doing. And that kind of bores me a bit.
I would say that this is a an episode that is a variation on an already explored theme.
Yes.
And all I would say is what it clarifies is that the fundamental question in this series for me is if I was to like posit it as a college essay, if I was given like a class on this as a House.
The worst class ever at the worst university with a like, let's do a paper on House.
We had at my college, we had a university for the UK peeps. We had an entire module that you could do on Harry Potter. So why not House? Anyway.
Wow.
If we were doing a course on House MD, I would say one of the essay topics I would propose that people take is anything goes, discuss in relation to House MD. Because that is basically the thesis or the central question of this television series, which is anything goes? Really? Let's test that. Does anything go when you have the means to do it or the brilliance to do it? Is it right? Is it wrong? Our rule, because they put him in a rule-based environment, this character who is resoundingly anarchistic, and say, do your worst. Or do your best, I guess. And I guess it's really about kind of, is anarchism within if one person has anarchism within a rule-based or structure-based environment, can they flourish? Is it sustainable? Can they thrive? Can they survive? Or will they just explode or just fizzle away?
Yeah. Which I think is a concept that is explored really well in the series as a whole, but I think is done better in individual episodes outside of this. I think a lot of this as well is like, I mean, even in terms of drama, right? Like, maybe if this episode wasn't like, you know, I'm happy to let an episode go if it just like gives me pure drama or like kind of uncomfortable moments or something for me to really get my teeth into. But there's a bit at the end. This will really be the last thing I have to say on this, but there's a bit at the end where, you know, where House, you know, as we've said before, he follows her out the hospital after she's been discharged with a psych referral for Munchausen's. And he says, look, you should have this disease. You should have all these symptoms. There's something stopping it, but I think you should have it. And then he like gives her this, like this cocktail of like insulin and like cortisol and all of these like drugs to take, which will basically cause her to have all the symptoms that he thinks she has so that she'll be believed and she'll get the treatment. Anyway, she gets brought back into the hospital after she collapses in the snow and has a seizure. She gets brought back into the hospital. They start doing the treatment, which starts off with them having to destroy her immune system so that they give her a bone marrow transplant. And House very quickly, after like a few minutes of her being in the radiation room, is like lying on her bed randomly. I don't know why he's doing this. And he like smells a grapey smell. And then it turns out that he realizes that actually she just has a common infection, which has like just gotten in through the bruises on her stomach. And the reason that that infection wasn't showing up is because of the antibiotics trick that Cameron used earlier to prove that she had Munchausen's. So a nice bit of irony there that she like had Munchausen's and she made herself better in order to get discharged. But he just goes in and explains that to people, and it kind of slowly comes out that he actually did lie to everyone and give this woman a cocktail of very dangerous drugs to give her, put her through a treatment of ruining her immune system, which could have killed her because she had, you know, a viral infection. And like at the end, everyone's just like, oh, And then it kind of ends. And I can imagine in a better episode that would have happened like in the middle, and then everyone would have been quite disgusted with House. And I do like those moments where House is so outrageous that people are like, you've gone too far. And it's kind of a bit, you know, he either reflects on that or he doesn't. And, you know, it creates these uncomfortable, dramatic moments. But I think even with moments like that, I mean, that's a pretty bad thing that House has done. And it's very much falls to the wayside, because after that, they kind of heal the patient and Cuddy's like, Foreman, you're off the job. House is back in charge. And it's like, oh, okay, that was all of that stuff's kind of set up as like a big thing. Like, oh, how's House going to deal with, sort of another authority figure? And not only does he basically ignore him, he then does something totally unethical, but then House just becomes in charge again. Even though anyone would be like, oh my God, House, that's awful. Like, you should be struck off. I think even dramatically, like, this episode is very weak. It even has big moments, but they fall very flat. Mm. And I just think it's very strange.
Yeah. I guess my only thing to say is that it was also a bit of a twist, in the sense you think Foreman is, because of his conventional kind of leadership skills, he would be the leader or the natural choice. But once compared to House's leadership style, he starts to realize that he is not as good as that, or he has a lot to learn in that respect. You know, conventionally, he should be like acing it. He does all the admin. It's wonderful, and gives Cuddy like an easy ride in that respect. But incomparable to the results that House can produce. Yeah, that would be the only thing that I would say apart from that. It's like also a twist on that. It's like, what is leadership? Is it being good at the admin, or is it more than that?
I think that's it. And, I mean, as we say to everyone, you know, get in touch with us. Let us know what you think, because I know that some people really like this episode. I just find it mildly underwhelming, and it does ask some questions, but I just don't think it capitalizes on anything. But I mean, I guess we've given our summations there. Should we end this, or do you have more to say? I don't mind.
No, I have nothing more to say.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, you know, thanks. Sorry, the problem was I was going from being a bit my sort of disappointed moment in the episode to then giving the outro, and I realized I can't give a disappointed outro. So I'm gonna turn it back up again. Well, anyway, thanks for joining us, everyone. This ended up actually being a slightly long episode, but I guess it always happens with the episodes where we kind of didn't really think there was anything special, because we then talk about a lot about why we didn't think it was special to qualify what we think. So, if you want to tell us what you thought, like, you can find us on Facebook at Differential Diagnosis HouseMD Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at HouseMDcast. And just let us know. But overall, we hope you enjoyed our hopefully not average chat about what we think is an average episode. And we'll see you next week with a bit more of an action-packed episode. With Failure to Communicate, Season 2, Episode 10, which involves a very interesting patient problem and a big move in the Stacey and House story.
Oh, boy.
So, as always, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me. Thank you very much.
And we'll see you then, when we also fail to communicate our thoughts on the episode. See you later.